This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 291 for Wednesday, October 17th, 2018. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me this afternoon, Miss Megan Townsend. You can find her at Oh Megan Townsend on all the things you need to find her at. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I'm not entirely sure if my last sentence made any sense, but
it did.
Okay, that's good.
I got it. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, and I because we're now not toting the Nerdasmic thing, I want to make sure that people know it's TOWNSHEND to find you.
That H is very important
Yeah.
Yes. The number of people who try and pronounce my last name is Townshend. Is astronomical.
The only reason that I get it right is and get it right and wrong at the same time because you've caught me on the misspelling of your first name before, and that you don't have an H in Megan.
Mm-hmm.
So my roommate in university spelled her name M-E-G-H-A-N. And
yeah, there's like 12 different ways to spell.
Exactly. So for years I had to type that out. And an ex-girlfriend from years and years ago was Townsend, but without the H. So my brain kind of mashes all the spellings I know, and I just type it out quick, and then I go back and I change it, and I go back and I change it, and
yeah.
it's now fine. I think it's like when the year changes over in January. Like after podcasting with you for a year now, I think.
Yeah.
It's like I now can spell it right without mistakes.
That's good. So apparently the reason why there is no H in my first name, like my mom wanted, because her last name is so weird. Like it sounds normal, but like just when you look at it on paper, it's just like, what?
Mm-hmm.
It's really confusing. So my mom was like, oh, I'm going to make your first name really simple. But I have like a sort of personal vendetta against the letter H because it's in my last name, but people will often take it out of my last name and put it in my first name instead. So ultimately everything is just screwed up and it's just like, oh boy,
it's
okay.
A transient H. Yeah. Like that's just all kinds of wrong.
Yeah. But I found out recently it's supposed to be Townshend. Like you're supposed to like really... Like instead of Townsend, it's Townshend
because mm-hmm.
it's fancy English or something.
Yeah,
I noticed it too.
I just did another episode of the Spun Chunks with Pixel Riffs on Monday, and he's from Britain, so he has an English accent, but he also from his particular region of Britain, he says H like H. Yeah, there's a hard H. It's similar to Newfoundland and Cape Breton in Atlantic Canada, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And weirdly, my dad does that too, even though he's from Halifax. It's an odd thing. He doesn't say it in a word, but if he's referring to the letter H, he says the letter H.
I can't decide if that bothers me or not. Like I was on a phone call for business with someone a little while ago, and another girl, like she was spelling things out for me, and anytime she said the letter H, it was H, and it was just, I was like, in my brain, I was like, you're putting too much emphasis on this word, like on this letter. And it's kind of just this weird, like, what? Okay, like it's like you understand it, but at the same time, you're like, why? It's like that whole bit with Stewie and Brian and Family Guy, where he's like, cool whip.
Oh.
And it's like, what? Why do you? Yeah. Why is there so much emphasis? Why are you saying it weird?
Yeah,
but it's fine.
Yeah. I'm not sure where that comes from. Like, I mean, I get that. I mean, Canada and Atlantic Canada are going to have a lot of, you know, British colonization, and like, there's going to be those kind of influences and stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know where it originated. Like, you know, whether that's the original way that it pronounced it, and where the way that we're pronouncing it as H is the bastardized version, and like, you know. Where does the dialogue fall apart? I mean, anybody that studies English as a language, especially if it's their second language, quickly points out, like, you guys have got no rules, all the rules, so many broken rules. Like,
yeah, we have more exceptions to the rule than things that actually follow the rule.
Exactly.
It's like, I before E except after C. Like, that's only in a handful of things.
Yeah. And have you seen those coffee mugs that, like, dot around on the internet where it's, like, through, though, thou, like all these different O-U-G-H words, and they all have different sounds, but they're all spelled the exact same.
Yeah. I don't, like, I, props to anyone who learns English as a second language. Like, I'm here complaining that Mandarin is too hard. I mean, to be fair, it is a hard language.
Yeah.
But English has got nothing on English. Like, at least, like, Mandarin has no, like, conjugation. Like, you don't have to, whereas French has, like, 15 different ways of conjugating.
Drove me nuts. That's why I hated French in school.
I didn't mind it. Like I think, I don't know, because I was learning it at such a young age that it kind of just became second nature really, really quickly.
Yeah.
But then when you actually try and think about it, you're like, oh, there's two different possible combinations I could use to make this make sense.
Yeah.
I guess it just becomes like, yeah, it becomes second nature, but there's no conjugation in Mandarin at all. But what you do have to be careful about is tones. Like, it's a very tonal language.
Okay.
So it's really, really easy. I don't know if I said that on the show before, but it's really easy to change the meaning of a word depending on how you say it.
Mm.
And oftentimes when it's written down, the character is the same as well. So you almost have to read everything like in context.
Right.
So like the word, like the sound like ma, depending on how you say it, it can be different things. Like if you just say like ma, like kind of straight, that's more of like a question sound. So if you're going to say, how are you? It'd be like, ni hao ma. It's kind of just general, you know, general noise. And then for mother, it's ma, which is slightly like raised.
Right.
That's mom.
Yeah.
And then for horse, it's ma. So those are all like the same sound.
It's like an apostrophe in the middle of the letter. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. And it's funny. I've never heard you speak Mandarin before. That's really cool.
Oh.
It's very similar to how you can change a phrase in English where, you know, something could be in a form of a question. That was a statement. Yeah. Something could also be in the form of a question, which is, you know, has a question mark at the end of it.
There's a really, really cool sentence that I saw online. And the sentence was, I didn't say she stole my money. But if you put emphasis on every word, it changes the meaning of the sentence every time.
Right.
I didn't say she stole my money. I didn't say she stole my money.
Yeah.
I didn't say she stole my money. Yeah. It's different. Like, it changes everything. And it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. And then it happens online. I remember it was one of those jokes, I think, on the Big Bang Theory when it first started, was Sheldon not getting sarcasm.
And oh, yes.
So, you know, you get someone that just managed to learn, you know, English to the point where they're relatively fluent, and then they have to learn how to, like, what people mean when they're being completely sarcastic.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Good luck.
Like, different people have, like, different levels of sarcasm. Like, some people are really obvious about their sarcasm, but then some people will just kind of say it but sound really, like, really serious.
Yeah. Are you a heavy... And, like, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's funny how different people... like put emphasis on their on sarcasm.
Yeah. My brand of sarcasm usually revolves. It does not work if you're not in person or you don't know me really, really well.
Yes.
Because mine is just cold, just really, really cold, dry sarcasm. So
yeah.
I'll say something deadpan, and if you're not looking at me, you're not going to realize I'm joking.
Yeah. It's
really...
I would say I know you pretty well, so that, like, it's I can tell. Like,
yeah, there's a couple of times, like, I've had that happen in social situations where, you know, you're doing something, you're playing a board game or whatever, and people are looking down at the thing that they're doing. And you say something and someone has to look up, and it's not until they look up that they start to laugh, because then they see me and they're like, oh, okay, he was kidding.
Yeah.
It's like, otherwise that was really inappropriate.
You know,
I had something I was going to point out too, and I can't remember what it was. But anyway, it's languages and I find communication and stuff like that is really intriguing. Oh, I remember what it was. Are you a heavy emoji texter?
No. I'm going to say yes and no. In terms of emojis, like actually going into like in my emoji keyboard and finding an emoji, no, I hate that. In terms of using emoticons, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Very often. Sorry. So like semicolon and a bracket or like, you know, greater than sign of a three.
Yeah, winky face,
stuff like that. I find that a lot faster and a lot easier.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that dates me a little bit, because that's kind of like the MSN days when you had like MSN Instant Messenger and you were like, you know, those are your shortcuts for doing like faces and stuff.
And they usually change when you do that anyway. Like you can, depending on what system you're on. Like I know when I, a lot of times when I'm chatting with people, I'm usually at a keyboard at my Mac. So When I'm typing, it's way faster for me to just hit colon bracket for smiley face than it is to go go find some blushy face or some, you know, silly whatever. No, I meant that basically the winky face is like the savior of me being misunderstood. You know, when it comes to being sarcastic and texting, because if I don't, you know, like sometimes the winky face is really important. And I've had conversations with friends where you're just kind of like, I don't really understand what's going on. And then like the next text they send is the winky face. You're like, you need to include that in the actual sentence. Because otherwise...
Sometimes I forget to include it. I'm like, maybe I should do this. I often do the semicolon like P, like almost like sticking your tongue out, kind of like, oh, I'm making like a stupid face or something. I often do that one.
And here's
kind
the thing
of like that, to show, I find the winky face too flirty.
With the tongue sticking out,
it's like, I'm just joking, but like the winky face can be a little bit flirty, depending on who you're talking to.
The problem with some of the new emojis I find too, because depending on what app you're using, sometimes they autocorrect into the actual like yellow face image as opposed to just the text. The colon and the P looks like the tongue being stuck out the side of your mouth, you know, kind of like derpy. Yeah. Whereas sometimes the emoji that creates, the tongue is right down the middle and it looks like you're panting. So it's a delicate balance between like derp and hello. And it's just like, wait a minute. Like I'm not a puppy dog. Like I'm not thirsting for joking. Like, sometimes it's a little bit weird.
I'm just looking at my phone right now and I'm looking at that emoji and I totally see what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Just at my keyboard. Yeah. And I wish there was one, like there's one with the tongue sticking out to the side, but it's like almost too smiley.
It's smiling that looks like, you know, this looks delicious, you know, because I mean, the cartoonist in me, of course, goes back to all the different kinds of, you know, Hallmark expressions that you go through when you're, you know, trying to convey an emotion from a comic character, you know, like you just stick the tongue out, you know, with a smile and it usually means that, ooh, this looks delicious. And there's a couple of like kind of universal, you know, things that we can probably track back to like, you know, early Disney and early Warner Brothers. But there's one other, so the one that fixes the tongue sticking out in the middle is the one with the eyes are squinted. So then it's like, you know, it's kind of like you're closing your eyes really hard and going, bah, you know, like then it goes back to being jokey as opposed to being like sticking your tongue out and looking at something. Like it's weird. I'm not sure how or where these things are designed or who decides on like, what is the best one for the use case? Like, I mean, can you imagine the board meeting at, you know, wherever these things are decided on for what platform? It's like, so what are our smiley faces going to look like and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you can only imagine the back and forth and the subtleties and stuff like that. Because everybody's going to come with different cultural backgrounds. Like it's just, you know.
It's true.
I wonder if they mean different things in different places, you know, like, you know, Japan versus France versus here.
I know that there's been some like discourse even in North America about like there's one particular emoji, and I'm talking particularly about like on like the iOS emoji, and there's one that looks like an emoji is like baring its teeth. Some people think that to mean like, oh, it's a big grin, like your big grin where you're showing all your teeth, and other people are like, that's I think of that one as like a grimace, where you're just like, oh, like that's you know, that's kind of a weird thing. Or like even the one with like the two hands that are together, some people oftentimes, especially when I'm typing in Mandarin, if I say thank you, or even if I say thank you in English, it's like those two like praying hands kind of come together. But I also know that people use it for like the sign, like the praying hands, like the praying hands symbol that's really prevalent in a lot of Catholic.
Oh yeah, sure, yeah.
Catholic things.
Yeah.
So some of them are kind of, I guess, hit or miss.
Yeah, or dual like meetings. People, you know, like you can also that can also be very Buddhist in terms of just meditation. You know, like there's a lot of different stuff that you can do. The grimace face is called the grimace face. So, I mean,
is it called the grimace
face? Yeah. And that to me is how I've always thought about it too. It's always like, like,
I hope I got this right.
You know, like
I think of more of it just like, that's, you know, awful,
like it's a little sheepish. It's like, this might get me in trouble, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, now that we've, you know, completely broken down the human language into smiley faces, and
I think we're pretty much going to be going back into hieroglyphics again with this.
Yeah.
With the emoji business.
Yeah. You know, there's a bunch of hand gestures that we'll just completely gloss over.
That's true.
So I caught up on The Flash this past weekend, and I didn't realize it was coming to Netflix. I heard nothing about it. I just kind of
same.
Yeah, I just got an email, and I have to tip my hat to Netflix. I have been getting emails not too often, but often enough where I'm just like, oh, cool. I'll check out to see what's new on Netflix, or here's what's recommended for you. Now, sometimes it's nothing new. Sometimes all six things in the email are things I've seen on Netflix and either decided not to watch or they're already in my list. Mm-hmm. And other times it's like, oh, I had no idea that Warcraft, the movie, was on Netflix. Fantastic. I've seen it already, but that's kind of a good, comfortable movie to watch on a Friday night when you want something safe. Like you just want to watch something you know is good and entertaining. Yes. You haven't seen in a really long time.
Yes.
And it's
side note, I love that movie.
Yeah.
That whole movie delighted me so much. There are so many people in the theater when I went to go see it with my roommate who were just like, oh, that was crap. And I was just like, I loved it. It was just the perfect amount of nerdiness. Mm-hmm. There was enough callback to different things, but it also looked good enough. Anyway, sorry, I'm done. Sorry.
Oh, good movie. Man. Continue. Some of the things in that film looked phenomenal. Like I love what they can do now with fantasy and CG and motion capture and stuff like that, you know. And I think a lot of it has to do with even like the Avengers, you know, like with what they do with Mark Ruffalo and Hulk and like all that kind of stuff. I really and probably also Gollum and, you know, Lord of the Rings. But yeah, now that they're into, you know, because Lord of the Rings was made in like 1997.
I know.
You
know,
like, so, you know, fast forward 20 years, things have gotten a lot better. I find that things are really, really cool in that way, to the point where you no longer look at special effects. I mean, Thanos from Infinity War is a perfect example of like, I just looked at him like a character in the movie. Never once did I think, how did they do that? You know, like,
yes,
you know, it even looks a little bit, he even looks a little bit like Brolin, right? Like, it just, that kind of stuff is really, really cool. But yeah,
I like how they do that too, to keep actors like performance intact as well.
Yes, yeah. Because
I know sometimes the fear, because they did that with a lot of traditional animation. Like I know that Paige O'Hara, who plays Belle in Beauty and the Beast, she did this motion where she like brushed a piece of hair out of her face, mm-hmm. and that became like a character tick for Belle,
yes.
throughout the entire course of the movie. Mm-hmm. And that little bit of behind the scenes performance was added into the character performance, and I like how they do that. Because like a character or an actor puts so much emphasis and so much time and effort into doing this character that if they're completely CG and all that is lost,
yeah.
it's like, what was the point?
Oh yeah. No, I think the first time I ever saw or heard of them doing that was watching the behind the scenes on Aladdin, because they had a camera crew filming Robin Williams doing the voice for the genie, and the animators were taking tons and tons and tons of visual cues for what he was doing. Because, of course, like, he's not just standing still in the booth.
Yeah. You know, oh, no,
when that guy was around, like, he was a monster in front of any audience, whether it was an audience of two or an audience of 2,000, right?
Yeah.
But anyway,
he's a good guy.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that was, like, 4 years ago now that he passed
away. I know.
It's crazy.
I know. Wild how quickly time goes.
So anyway, with Netflix kind of popping in with a lot of new stuff, which is great, and a lot of emails and stuff that I find poignant, like they're not, even if I'm not interested in any of the things that they're recommending, they're in the wheelhouse. Like they're not far off from what my interests are, which I think is nice. And I do find them valuable because, I mean, every once in a while I'll get two or three things. They're like, oh, I'm bookmarking that. And hey, look, The Flash is on Netflix. Now, Supergirl has been on Netflix and then off of Netflix. It's like they had a deal with ABC, but then they didn't have the same deal with CW. So Supergirl season 1 and 2 was on Netflix, but season 3 was not, or is not yet. Now Flash is on. Yeah, so Flash is now on. Seasons 1 through 4 are on.
It is on. Season 3 is on there now. I'm actually just looking.
Oh, nice. Cool. I figured it would be because of The Flash. Now, I don't know whether Supergirl has even premiered yet this year. Again, I stopped watching these shows about halfway through season 3 last year. So all of them I just kind of bailed on. I think around the Christmas, I watched the crossover. So the Christmas crossover thing that they do, which is always a lot of fun, regardless of whether you're watching the season or not. Those are really cool. I fell off at that point. So I had to go back to the wiki and figure out where I left off and then kind of drop into season 4 shortly after Christmas for The Flash. But I haven't figured out the timing yet. It looks like it's a 24-hour wait, but season 5 just started a couple weeks ago, and season 5 of The Flash is also on Netflix. There's one episode. You can watch episode 1 that aired on the 8th. Episode 2 would have aired last night on the 16th, or the 7th, I guess, was the first one. Anyway, point being, Joel does math, and last night, the 16th, was episode 2 of season 5 of The Flash. I'm waiting to see if tonight, 24 hours later, or tomorrow, 48 hours later, it shows up on Netflix, because I'm fine with that. I don't need to see these things when they air. Even if I was watching them the same day that they came out, I would not be sitting down and watching them at the time that they're on. Like, if I was paying for cable, I would be DVRing it and watching it at 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. when I'm done working or done podcasting or something, right? Like, I just, I want to, or I'd save it and want to watch it with breakfast or dinner or something the next day. So I'm totally fine with my Netflix subscription getting me current television shows 24 hours later. Brilliant. More of it.
I think that's fantastic. That.
And if they're going to do that with Supergirl this year, I'm going to be back on board with both shows probably.
Because my one problem with adding like TV shows way after the fact is that, like, you know, you as someone who doesn't have cable, like, I don't want to pay for cable. Mm-hmm. There's really only a couple shows that I would really want to pay cable for. And even then, they're not on all the time. So it's like a constant flux of like canceling and subscribing to cable packages, which is just stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Like having things air at the same time, or at least a couple days after they air on television, it still gives people who don't want cable a chance to, you know, like stay current. Because there is a TV show that I used to follow pretty religiously when I still lived at home with my mom. It was Nashville.
I've seen several seasons of that.
Yeah, no, I really liked that show. And then it just finished. But once I, you know, finally got my own place and everything and decided to stop paying for cable, I was waiting. Like, my mom would tell me about the show. And I was like, you can't tell me about it because I'm behind by like a season.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not out yet. So there's so many things that were spoiled for me that I you know, in that show that I didn't want spoiled, but I mean, it's whatever. I like this thing. Like, it's this process of like releasing shows at the same, like around the same time that they're airing on TV. Yeah.
I mean, I get that if you want to be on the cutting edge and see the thing, then you got to watch it on cable or whatever, you know, whatever network might have. Because some of these cable networks have like same day streaming or something like that. But
yeah,
usually not in Canada. Usually if you're in Canada, you're kind of out of luck. But
I'm
on board with it. I think it's fantastic. So I'm looking forward to trying to get it back on board. I'll avoid spoilers in season 4 just because it really only just came to Netflix. And there's a season 5, so you know that Barry doesn't die. You know, like there's the obvious things that go into when you're watching these earlier seasons. But I mean, like, there's a main bad guy. It's the Thinker. That's not a secret. That happens in the first few episodes of season 4. But the second half, there's a lot of different things about how they go about beating the Thinker or failing against the Thinker. Like, there's all these different episodes that they go through. It still unfortunately suffers from 26 episodes or more of content, or 22 when there really should have only been 13. There's a couple of episodes that I find just so bad. I can't remember the name of the actor. I don't have IMDb open, but he's the guy that plays Harrison Wells on the show. And he's a good actor when he wants to be. I chalk it all up to bad writing. Like, all of it is just bad character writing. So in the Flash universe, because I know that you're not familiar, but essentially they cover the multiverse, the DC multiverse, you know, multiple Earths. So there's Earth 1, Earth 2, Earth 3, Earth 4.
I did know that part.
So there's a doppelganger for every character on these other Earths, which is good or bad. Like, sometimes they're a mustache twirling villain. Sometimes they're just the same, but a little bit different, you know? So Harrison Wells has got multiple Wells on different Earths, and somebody got it in their head that, hey, this will be a really fun opportunity to get this guy to do a bunch of character actors. One of them is going to have a really bad French accent. The other one is going to sound like he's a playboy, pot smoking, you know, moron. And then the other person is going to be, I don't know, some pretentious German scientist character, all of whom are literally cartoon characters. Like, they're not even people, you know, and they have to turn to these characters to get advice on a particular problem for that episode or whatever. Thankfully, they don't go on for very long. It's only an episode thing. Like, it's one of those things where when you know that the plot is going to be solved within the episode, it's not very good. When you are looking at an episode where the plot is going across several episodes or perhaps even a half season arc, they're way better. And it's similar to like the mall episode in Voltron, where you're just kind of like, oh God, like I'm not watching this show to watch these characters run around a space mall. You know, like it's the same with The Flash. Like I'm not watching The Flash to follow one of his scientist buddies have basically a hologram telephone call with himself, as the other four characters on the screen are all played by the same actor in different costumes with terrible, terrible accents. It's just like, it doesn't do anything to propel the story. Now, it's still worth watching. And the unfortunate thing is that you have to muscle through these episodes because usually the last 10 minutes or the secondary story in the show is important. You can't miss it. It's gonna weigh heavy in the rest of the season. You know, it's got some other character development is happening with Caitlin Snow or with Barry or, you know, something. And what I think the show suffers from, even though I still say it is worth watching, you just have to kind of go into it with these expectations, is that The Flash is sillier than other superhero shows to its strength.
Right.
The problem arises when it gets too silly. And then they're also in the same episode or in the same arc dealing with some very serious stuff. So you'll have Barry going through kind of some very emotional things where, you know, he's upset about something or he's battling with how to lead this team. He's trying to go from being Barry the superhero to being Barry the team superhero leader. And he doesn't know how to do that, or it's stressing him out, or there's these big life and death situations where they've put, you know, I mean, it's similar to most superhero stuff, like the world is going to end or the city's going to blow up or whatever these things are. There's these high, high stakes. And then you have that book ended with like these really bad dad jokes by characters that really annoy you, or like, and it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Whereas there's other more fun episodes that happen where they have a reprieve, you know, where the villain is biding his time. And so they can put in a little filler episode where it's mostly, you know, it's Christmas or it's Valentine's, or they do a fun little one-off special and they work. And even though they're silly, I like them because everyone in it is in the same space. All the writing is in the same space. You go from having this really campy writing, this really bad direction, to cutting to a scene where, you know, Barry and Iris are almost in tears. And I mean, the acting is fantastic. Like
some of these
people are just phenomenal. It's just that it's this juxtaposition of these phenomenal serious scenes that I like in a superhero show. Like it gives it a lot of weight, especially because it makes you realize where Barry's vulnerable, right? Like, I mean, he's not Superman, he's not indestructible, but like really, he's the Flash, so he's kind of hard to catch, you know, as far as you know, the bad guys go. So it's really cool when you can say, no, here's where he's vulnerable. Like, here is the turmoil that's going on and how he's not perfect. And then, you know, like it gives the character some real depth. But then all that depth is just stripped away from the show when it's like, they're trying to be funny. They're trying too hard to be funny. And it's breaking to the point where like people don't even talk like this. Like the,
right.
You know, like you're looking at a real scene with Barry and Iris and that's a real conversation. It's real emotion. I'm trying to think about the best way to put it. You identify with them. You know, you can easily imagine yourself feeling that way in that situation, where then you cut to this other thing where, you know, the Wellses or, you know, or Cisco or something else is happening. That's goofier. And they push it from going goofy to like, people just don't talk like that. Or no one is that stupid. Like no one is that dumb in real life. You know, like, and so that's where it breaks for me. It's still better than Arrow. Like it's still got a cut above, you know, some other shows that I can't get into. So I do highly recommend it. And especially if you haven't, because I know that we were talking pre-show, that you haven't watched any of The Flash.
I haven't watched it consecutively. I've watched bits and pieces. I've watched some of the crossover episodes with Supergirl. But I haven't sat down and watched the entirety of The Flash from the beginning, from like start to where it's at now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I definitely want to. Like, I really like The Flash. And my mom follows it pretty heavily. And so far, she really likes it, too.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's still following it now. But, you know, she's highly recommended it. And she said really, really good things about it. But I feel like that's a thing that happens with a lot of TV shows. It's like, after you get a couple seasons in, you've established the characters. It just, you try and find... Like, it's like almost like the meat in the middle is sort of kind of lacking. It's like, okay, we got to fill out the sandwich a little bit. What are we going to add in here?
Yeah.
So it's just a lot of like empty carbs that kind of just get added on top of it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what happens to a lot of shows, especially with network TV. It's because I don't think anyone really knows how long the show is going to go on for. So it's like, you have to think long term, but also maybe not too long term, just in case it gets canceled.
Mm-hmm.
So I think because of all that uncertainty, things can lose a lot of structure. And I know that TV shows are usually supposed to go by like a Bible. There's like a show Bible, but I find that a lot of places aren't doing that, or they recycle the same sort of plot over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
In like different ways. It's like same character going to the same shit just with someone new this time.
And
it's kind of getting kind of monotonous. Like, I almost wish that if a show is doing well, like have a clear, like I use Avatar as like an example for everything, because to this day I still think that is the best,
mm-hmm,
you know, constructed show that's ever been. It has a clear, distinctive beginning, middle, end. It had a clear, story. It did have some fillers, kind of where they needed to add some like fun, lighthearted, you know, funny moments. But still, like, every episode served a purpose, and every moment had a reason for being there. And there was always something for them to work towards. Whereas, you know, they're not just sitting in this kind of weird limbo. It was like, well, we have an episode we got to put out, but we don't really know what it's going to be about yet, because we don't know what's happening, you know, in like a couple months. So it's, I don't know, network TV is kind of an interesting bear that way, because you can lose out on so much, I guess, for lack of a better word.
And I did notice some problems with Flash season 4 on some of the episodes that I would have, if I recall the numbers, they were kind of like in the mid-teens. So that's that February, March hump before they can really start the 4-episode arc that leads you into the climax, you know, that leads you into the season finale, you know?
Right.
So the crossover is done, the comeback after Christmas is done, and then they've got these 3 episodes that are just kind of in the middle. And the writing goes to crap. Like, you just, you're watching characters come into the scene and repeat the same plot point, you know, at different points in the episode. You're just like, okay, I get it. Like, you know, whether it's the fire truck is important, or this meta is, the meta being the meta human that they're fighting, that, you know, monster of the week sort of thing. The bit of information is that, you know, or and something that happens a lot with the Flash is that, like, you can't mess with the timeline. Like, if you mess with the timeline, then that's bad.
Yeah.
And especially if you're in season 4, if you're watching this far, you already know that messing with the timeline is bad. And in this particular episode, like, the number of times that sentence is said by the same or different characters, it's like, I get it. I'm not an idiot. Like, move on. Find something else more interesting to say than just repeating the essential plot points. Like, I find it very condescending. I find it very condescending writing. Lou mentioned something. I think it was either last week, either on the show or after the show when we were chatting. And he said that when he was watching The Flash and he doesn't like an episode, he says, I can almost guarantee you that when I go to look up who directed it, it's the same person that directed the other shows that I didn't like, the other episodes that I didn't like.
Interesting how patterns happen that way.
Yeah. And in my case with The Flash, it's usually when Kevin Smith is at the helm, which is unfortunate, because when he's at the helm of Supergirl, they're actually pretty good. You know, like, it just, and he's somebody that understands comics and knows that writing, knows that, you know, what's cool, you know, what's badass, and also what's kind of goofy and fun and within those bounds. And, you know, like, for example, I haven't watched Supergirl in a long time, but Wynn, her best friend there, the guy that's the computer dirt nerd, he's the kind of funny that I really like in superhero shows. Like, he's nervous. He kind of mutters something as they cut to a different scene. And when you realize what he said, you're like, that's pretty good.
Oh, that's good.
Right?
But he's a really good actor, too. He's a phenomenal singer.
Yeah.
He is, like,
He doesn't amazing. Look at the camera when he says his lines, though. Like, you know, there's some campy stuff where you're just like, oh, really? Like, this couldn't have been more staged. Like, you're telling me that the entire fight scene was put together so you could crack this joke? Like, ugh. That's where I start to check out. Now, that doesn't happen in Supergirl, but that happened a couple times in Flash. I'm just like, come on. And that and putting arbitrary accents or funny things in it. Katie Sackhoff is in it. And she puts on a British accent, which she can't do. I love Katie Sackhoff. I think she's a phenomenal actor. I loved her in Battlestar Galactica and Longmire. Both of those times, she was speaking like an American, and she was phenomenal. It's like, I love you, Katie. You can't do a British accent, especially not a cartoonish Cockney, like Dick Van Dyke. it was so bad. It's like no one learned their lesson 60 years ago. Like, come on. So stuff like that. And it's the kind of thing like that where it just completely takes you out of it. They have there's some villains throughout Flash that kind of remind you of the Joker, but none of them can really go that far. And so it's just like, well, you've added all this quirky weirdness, but you don't have any of the malice. So you don't get the excuse. Like, now this is just hokey and stupid, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas if you have, you know, a character like the Joker in Batman, even though, even in the cartoons, like the Batman animated series, he's silly. He does some silly stuff, but every once in a while, you know, Mark Hamill drops his voice and has that sinister little, like, this is going to be, you know, the end of whatever. And he's like, it adds that dimension to the character. But if you don't have both of those dimensions, then you're just like, this is just dumb. You know, and there are some times when even the cast of The Flash, like the characters, will actually call attention to the fact, like, you know, it could be a name from the comic book, and it's like, that's a really stupid name, and they're bound by the fact that in the Flash universe in the comics, this is this character's name, and the characters in the Flash TV show will just look at one of them and go, like, that's a really dumb name, and they're like, eh. Like, what can you do? So that kind of stuff I do find, you know, nice.
I like it when things are self-aware like that.
Yeah, and that's when they get away with it. It's when they're not self-aware. It's like when they're trying to be funny but not, you know, but not being self-aware about it. That's when it fails wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. All this complaining aside, I do think people should check it out, especially without getting into any spoilers. Again, the season 4 cliffhanger, which is amazing because you can just watch season 5 episode 1 immediately thereafter and not have to wait 4 months or whatever. To see what's coming.
Like all the rest of the peasants did who don't have Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little on the nose. They're playing it pretty safe. However, it does add some dynamic. There's a little bit of, oh God, this again, but at the same time, there's a lot of really cool, I did not see that coming sort of stuff. And it's in a fun way, not in a doom and gloom. Oh no! It's more of a fun twist to the show where I'm glad that they were able to take it in a different direction, which I think is really, really cool. I'm curious. We'll have to do when I'm talking with someone on the show that's seen up to season 5, I can talk about it a little bit more. But if you're gonna watch it at all, I don't wanna spoil anything. And because of course this episode is only a week old and. You know, some people might not have been able to catch up. Anyway, that's what I've been consuming. It was nice to finally find something in Netflix that had like 14 episodes of stuff that I hadn't seen. I didn't have to waste 20 minutes deciding what to watch. I could just watch whatever was next. What have you been spending your time doing on your downtime?
So a couple of things. So I actually, still in the Netflix vein, I actually started watching, I just remembered it, the show called The Good Place with Kristen Bell.
Yep. Yeah, I've seen season
really,
one.
Really, really, really good. I really, really like it. Have you finished season 1?
I think so.
Okay. That show had a lot of twists and turns that I actually was not expecting at all. But it's really, really lighthearted and funny.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also like it's a comedy. It's a comedy show. It's kind of weird. It's kind of quirky. It's a sitcom. Is it a sitcom though? I think of sitcoms usually as like something like Friends, where like you have laugh tracks and. What do you call it? Big Bang Theory.
I would compare The Good Place to The Office or Community, not really The Big Bang Theory, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, quirky sitcom with no laugh track. You know, like it's an out there sort of situation.
Right.
Different, you know.
But I really liked it. I saw a lot about it online, like on Tumblr and stuff. It didn't really grab me. Like the concept was kind of neat, but it didn't really draw me in until I put it on and then my roommate and I just couldn't stop watching it. Mm-hmm. We got through like the first two seasons probably within like a couple days and we're like, oh, okay, well it's over now.
Yeah. It's an easy watch.
Very, very easy watch. Everyone has their own negatives and their own issues, but also everyone is still super likable. And you can definitely see a lot of yourself in those people, which is kind of cool. Highly recommend if no one's watched it before. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I find that sometimes there's a little, for me, it goes a little bit over the top where it takes me out of it. I mean, it's a fantasy show about, you know, heaven and hell. So like it's for that, at least, you know, there's a lot of suspension of disbelief. So it gets you most of the way there. I think part of it is that I find Kristen Bell so endearing and
me too.
Like, and also I know how nice of a person she is in real life, you know, from interviews and things like that, that when they show her like in flashbacks being a really mean person, I don't buy it for a second. Like it just, to me, I'm watching Kristen Bell play a mean person on TV and then they go back to the Good Place, you know, set and you're just like, okay, now I'm going to get to see the character, you know, do the thing, you know, like, so that I find a little bit weird. And I don't remember his name. He's not an actor or a comedian that I find very funny at all. And that is the guy that plays the devil
Michael?
Yeah, Michael. Yeah. No, wait a minute. Is Michael Ted Danson?
Yeah.
No. I love Ted Danson. It's the darker haired guy that comes from the bad place to get her on the train.
The
guy that cuts his toenails at the table. Like, that guy. Like, every time he's on screen, I just find it just so overacted and so overdone that it doesn't at all do what I think it's supposed to. And I don't find it funny at all. It draws that line. I'm not one of those people that finds obnoxious humor funny.
Mm. That makes sense.
Yeah. But I really like everybody else, like Chidi and I mean, Ted Danson is the gem of that show.
He's great. God, he's so, so good. I really like the lady who plays Janet.
Oh,
I love Janet so much.
Yeah.
Janet is my favorite. There's one episode. Was it? They need to like reset her. So she's asking Michael to like kill her. She's like, you need to kill me, Michael. You need to kill me. Kill me. Kill me. And she's like doing like this little chant. But she says everything with like such a smile. She's like, I'm dead inside. But like she sounds so happy. And
yes.
I love her. And everyone online, I think, like connects with Janet on like a really emotional level because she's so robotic and she says all these really kind of horrific things, like these really, really terrible things, but she says it with a smile and everyone's like, Janet's me, Janet's my mood.
Yep.
And for some reason I find it hilarious, but she's fantastic. But I like Tahani is hilarious. Like anytime Tahani's on screen, the actress who plays Tahani as well, I guess she was supposed to be on The View at one point. Like she was coming to do a talk on The View. But on Instagram, she was like, oh no, my chocolate bar melted all over my carry-on. So all of my clothes are like covered in chocolate. So I have nothing to wear. So I'm going to be on live ass television in my pajamas. And she was, she had bunny slippers and everything. She just went whole hog for it.
Nice.
And she's kind of endearing. She's very, very sweet, but like all the characters are super, super wonderful.
Yeah. The only one that I don't find that great is, I can't remember Tahani's husband's name or her partner in the afterlife. I think the actor's name is Jason or something.
Jason, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the character's name.
I mean, is it the character's name? He's supposed to be a Buddhist monk, but he's basically like a Florida hoodlum.
Wannabe rapper.
He's a thug. Yeah. And he's dumb as a post. But like, and that's the thing where it's like, it's one of those things where, for whatever reason, like Troy and Abed and Community are believable, adorable, dumb. But this guy in Good Place for me is just, it's like, nope, no one is that stupid.
He's a little too much. I still like his character a lot. I think he still goes through some interesting arcs, but, but yeah, no, I know what you mean. I really enjoyed it though for something light and kind of like just empty calories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it's still worth checking
really
out.
Really, really fantastic.
I've been meaning forever to plug, Armchair Expert with Dax Shepard. It's a podcast that I've been listening to.
Oh, yeah. I love Dax Shepard. He's wonderful.
So I'm
he's,
not.
A, he's married to Christian Bell.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of his films. Just again, nothing against him. It's just not my brand of humor.
Right.
But I do find him very funny on the podcast. I'm hit or miss with a lot of celebrity podcasts. Like sometimes they're interesting, sometimes they're really not trying that hard. I would call his show an exception. It's really well put together. But the last, I think it was 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, he did the Good Place week. So he basically had Kristen Bell, Ted Danson, the girl that plays Janet. He had a bunch of people from The Good Place on his show to interview them for like an hour.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah, phenomenal. Anytime he sits down with his wife, it's hilarious because, of course, you ultimately they get into husband and wife bickering in a very friendly way. But man,
yeah,
it's really fun to kind of listen to those two take the gloves off sometimes. But also
I love them.
The Ted Danson interview was phenomenal.
I bet
it's very respectful. Like sometimes the celebrity, you know, comedian stuff, they say shit just because they can get away with it on a podcast and they've never been, it's like they've never been allowed to swear or say anything really inappropriate before on camera. And now that they're on their own podcast, they feel the need to stretch their legs. It drives me crazy. But the Ted Danson interview, he's a pillar of American television.
Yes.
You know, like you don't, even if you're really good friends with them, you still don't poke the bear, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and that was a phenomenal, phenomenal interview and really insightful into things I did not know about Ted Danson, like growing up with, like in or on or near a Native American reserve, and some of his best friends growing up were Native American. And he went into some really cool details about his childhood. It was very, very interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah. And of course they talk at great length about the show, like about The Good Place and some behind the scenes and what it's like to work with everybody and stuff like that. So if you're a fan of that show, then at least for the Good Place week, check out Dax Shepard's Armchair Expert. There's lots of other cool people that he's had on the show as well that I think were really, really good guests.
I'll have to give that one a listen. I also recently saw Venom as well. I know that we talked about the trailer online. I was kind of coerced into going to that one. I probably wouldn't have gone if I hadn't gone with my brother.
Right.
My friend used the perfect word to describe the movie.
So spoiler free, of course, because it's only been out for like a week. So
yeah, yeah, I'm not going to talk about any details, but he called it a nothing burger. It's good. It's good. But that's it. Like there's really no substance to it. It's a burger. It's all right. It's really nothing to write home about. And I thought it was like the perfect word of describing it. And it looked a lot better than the trailer had me believe. It didn't look as plasticky as I was. I mean, it didn't look amazing. Like the symbiote didn't look incredible, but it looked believable. Like you're able to sustain some sort of disbelief with it.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Hardy is good. Tom Hardy's a great actor anyway. Like really, you can't really go wrong with anything that Tom Hardy does.
I find again, like he's a good actor that has just been in some of the movies that I think are complete stinkers. So
yeah,
I find him hard to kind of get behind. Like I know he's talented, but it's also one of those things where like, but he doesn't make movies that I like. So it's,
I think his choices, but you know what? I don't think it's a testament to his talent. I think that's mostly the director's fault and the producer's fault.
Yes. Yeah. No, I'm not laying that at Tom Hardy's feet at all.
I like him as an actor. Like, I think he does some really interesting characters, and like his Eddie Brock is good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that, you know, I don't think that this is the same Eddie Brock that you would see or that I think a lot of people are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, I think our only cinema version of Eddie Brock was in the original Spider-Man trilogy by Sam Raimi, which is not good.
Topher Grace? That's, no, it's terrible.
Yeah, awful. I mean, like, Topher Grace is not a bad actor.
No, that's at Raimi's feet. But that is a terrible movie. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so he was he had a lot of motivation for being Venom. It's really, I find anti-heroes are really, really weird.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really complicated to try and make them an interesting and compelling character. Because I mean, with Venom in particular, Venom's supposed to be a villain. Like he's known as
he's not an anti-hero. Like, he is the bad guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So having him be an anti-hero was a little bit for your, it was kind of like, I got it, but at the same time I was trying to wrap my brain around the motivation of as to why.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you first meet Venom, you know, his whole thing is like, you know, evil. That's you know what he is, and then he kind of transitions to anti-hero, and it's motivationally it didn't make a lot of sense. So again, nothing burger. Yeah. It was good. There was a lot of weird timing issues that I thought were a problem. I found that the third act was way too rushed. Way too rushed. Really, really long first act. Like fairly long second act, and then the third act was just like, okay, we're done, end of movie, and it lasted for like maybe 10 minutes.
Wow.
Maybe 15, maybe 20. That's
really short. Yeah,
it was really fast. It was a really, really fast thing. And then yeah, it was, but it, I mean, it was good. Like I went to go see Night School before it, so my brother and I just went on a movie kick, and we just, you know, did two movies back to back. Night School was absolutely awful in comparison. So I think that my standards for movie watching were a little bit higher after seeing Night School.
Right.
But it was, I mean, it was all right. I don't know if I would go see it again. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. It wasn't a bad movie. It wasn't a good movie. It was a movie. It was fun to watch and fun to look at. There were some really good one-liners, though. Like Venom, the symbiote, has some really, really excellent one-liners that I thought were really funny. I like kind of surprising humor, or like, you know, things that you like that you don't expect for something to for someone to say. Some of it was pretty good. You know, really, you know, motivation wise and plot wise, it was kind of just, eh. It's all right.
So take Tom Hardy's performance, take the symbiote as they imagined it, maybe not use the anti-hero thing and maybe go full villain. If they did that in a Tom Holland, is it Tom Holland? That's a kid that plays Spider-Man, right?
Yeah.
Put that in a Spider-Man movie where Venom is the villain.
Yeah.
Is that something to go see?
Yes.
Yeah.
That'd be fantastic. I would be all about that. And I'm wondering if they're gearing up towards that. But I also wonder, I haven't really been following the Spider-Man comic books. I don't know if Venom ended up becoming an anti-hero at one point, which is why they did this for a movie.
I feel like Venom has his own comic series. I'm probably going to be corrected on that, but I feel like a lot of these characters end up with their own.
I feel like you're right. I definitely feel like you're right. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like Venom has the potential to be an anti-hero, and I feel like he is in some timelines of the comic book universe.
Mm-hmm.
An origin story, you know, when Venom's origin is fairly clear cut, I would say, as like being a villain of Spider-Man. It's the way they went with the movie seems like an odd choice. It's not a bad choice, but it's just a weird choice, especially with the how solid the DC universe, not the DC universe, totally different company, the Marvel universe is.
Yeah.
MCU, that's fairly solid in terms of like timeline and characters.
Yeah.
So having Venom kind of be an extra bit of that, but not part of it, and kind of going at it from a different angle is just a little bit.
And that's probably where that gets problematic, because Spider-Man and Sony still have a thing going on, even though there's partnerships with Marvel. It's not 100% under the Marvel heading. I can see when I heard about the Venom film, I was like, I don't necessarily like, why does everybody, well, again, there's a Joker film being made. Don't care. Like I don't want to go watch an entire film about the Joker. I don't care where he came from. I don't want to watch. I don't want to watch an entire, you know, a 40 minute act one of not the Joker. You know, like
that makes sense. I get you.
It's like every superhero origin movie where it's like, oh God, they're doing another origin movie for the character that everybody knows.
Yeah.
It's one of the best things about Spider-Man Homecoming. right? Is that he's just Spider-Man. Like they just they drop you right in. It's fantastic because they did the introduction in Civil War. Like just that was phenomenal because no one wants to watch, you know, I'm going to use Tobey Maguire as an example, but the first, you know, act of that first Spider-Man movie is painful. It's just like, oh my God, just become Spider-Man already. For the love.
You know, it's true. Yeah. And then you have Andrew Garfield's take on Spider-Man as well. That's also another origin.
He was good.
I liked that one a little bit more.
He's a little bit too cocky for me, but it was one of those things. Like Tom Holland has this really nice balance between being unsure but mouthy.
Yes.
You know, like
he feels like a kid who's like, all right, I'm kind of literally flying by the seat of my pants here.
Yeah.
Don't know what else I'm doing.
I mean, I think the best Spider-Man conversations that I've seen in film is the first like 10 minutes of Infinity War when Spider-Man and Iron Man are taking on the Maw, I think, and some other guy. And they don't know who Doctor Strange is, and Spider-Man keeps on calling them, why is there a wizard? He just arbitrarily gives labels to people and just, you're like, I gotta call him something. What the hell?
I think one of my favorite lines in the movie, he's like, hi, I'm Peter Parker, and like Doctor Strange is like, I'm Doctor Strange. He's like, oh, we're using our superhero names. I'm Spider-Man. And he's so endearing. Yeah. And he actually looks like a kid. One thing that we saw during Venom though was a trailer for Into the Spider-Verse or something, and it's like it's like an animated version of all the different stories of Spider-Man. You get Gwen, like Spider-Gwen. You get
Miles Morales.
A bunch of them. And I think Miles is like the main character. You get an aged up Peter Parker. And it looks really, really, really interesting. And I think, you know, for my Spider-Man radar, I'm a little bit over Spider-Man, to be honest. Like, not that I dislike Spider-Man, but there's just been, I think aside from Batman, it's had the most, movie adaptations.
Yeah.
And most game adaptations. I'm kind of looking for something else, but this looks really interesting, especially because a lot of people really want to see Miles as Spider-Man. We've seen a lot of Peter Parker, and not that I don't like Peter Parker. He's the OG Spider-Man, and everyone knows that Spider-Man is Peter Parker, but Miles Morales is, you know, an amazing Spider-Man as well in other comic book continuities, and having him as the main character, like the main Spider-Man of Into the Spider-Verse is really, really cool. I'm definitely going to keep that on my radar for sure.
Yeah, I was disappointed when they showed all the different characters, including the spider pig. Like, I was just like, oh, wait a minute.
Really? I thought it was kind of funny.
Well, I watched the first trailer and it was all Miles. Like, they didn't hint at anything else. They did say that there was multiple Spider-Men, but they didn't really get into any details. It really looked like it was focusing on Miles Morales. And I thought, that's awesome. Like, this is going to be really, really cool. And it has that cool vibe, but trailer 2 has got a very silly vibe to it. And again,
it does.
Gwen and Peter and Miles is a good dynamic, but then you add in like Spider Pig and the noir guy that's black and white, even when he's in a color universe, is like, that to me is like, that's just, it becomes Who Framed Roger Rabbit at that point.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yeah, okay. I mean, it's still going to be fun. Like it's obviously aimed at a younger audience and there's a place for all that kind of stuff. I mean, the comics are popular, all the, you know. But it's one of those things where the first trailer misleads you a little, I think.
I'm looking at it as it's going to be showing us the two different, you know, sides of it, I guess. I feel like it's going to have a lot of serious moments. Cause I mean, like the little clip that we saw at the end of Venom was pretty serious. Like it started off like pretty, pretty dark and pretty sad. And then it kind of got into a little bit more of like a funny scene. So I think it's going to have a really good balance of, you know, comedy, humor, and more serious moments.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty jazzed about it.
Cool.
But I mean, my expectations for anything aren't really super high ever. So I usually kind of go in like, you know, it's like, okay, let's see. And then, you know, I kind of reserve judgment until afterwards. I think the last movie I was super, super excited about was Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like, real, like, chomping at the bit for that to come out. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been anything lately that's...
Yeah, I don't have anything on my list. I don't think that I'm going to be waiting in line to go see.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. If you like the show, you can visit thecitadelcafe.com to find links to all the different things that Megan and I talked about. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. And if you are a patron and you are one of the few people out there that are supporting the show, I want to give out a real big thanks, because it's the patronage has been growing a little bit over the last couple of months, and it's just a really cool community. The Discord has been really talkative lately, and I really enjoyed it in there. And if you're not yet supporting the podcast, we are coming up on a whole bunch of renews, things like the hosting service and the domain registration and the little times where I have to put out some money to keep the podcast going. So if you are on the fence about whether you want to support the Citadel Cafe at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, now would be a perfect time to check it out. I'm also going to be making some changes over the next week or so on Patreon. Nothing is going to go away, but I'm going to be adding some new tiers, some new goals, trying to expand the show. And if you have some input, I'd like to hear it. So let me know either in the Discord or via email, and hopefully we can incorporate some of those ideas into the Patreon as it goes forward. But that's patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. And I will thank you in advance. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am doing online at joelduggan.com. That includes my illustration and design portfolio. If you'd like to hire me, then just drop me a line through the website. You can check out Comics Coast to Coast, where myself, Brian, and Matt interview comic creators, illustrators, and animators. You can check me out on The Spawn Chunks, where myself and Pixel Riffs do all kinds of Minecraft podcasting. And you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and I'm going to say Twitch with just my name, Joel Duggan. Megan, where can people find you online?
People can find me online at Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Instagram and Twitter are O, Megan Townsend, and YouTube is just Megan Townsend, no O.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.